it's good to have your company. My name is Simon Smart. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. My guest in the studio today is Bethany Huang. Good to have you in, Bethany.
Thanks. It's so great to be here.
Bethany is the is from the International Justice Mission in Washington, in D.C. This is a human rights agency that seeks justice for victims of slavery, sexual exploitation and other forms of violent oppression. We're going to talk about that today. People from IJM, lawyers, investigators and other professionals work with local governments to fight for victim rescue, to prosecute perpetrators and work with local communities to build up communities that have good public justice systems. Now, is that a reasonable summary of the work, Bethany?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a very challenging task that IJM has set itself. Can you tell us a little bit about the work?
Sure. Well, another way to encapsulate the mission of what we do is that we're working to rescue thousands, but then to also protect millions of people. And overall, we want to prove that justice for the poor is possible. So right now, that's something that is in most places of the world, it just seems impossible. There's so much corruption. There's so much intense violence and deception that is wreaking the most incredible havoc on the people who are the most vulnerable in our world. But what we've come to find is that when you one by one go after the people who are in need of rescue and the people who are perpetrating the abuse against them, when you bring the restraint of the law, when you prosecute those who are bringing the abuse, it starts to send a message to the entire system. So you can not only see individuals who are rescued become healed and find new life of freedom, but you can also send a message to entire systems of abuse and deception and corruption that selling children, for example, is just not going to be profitable anymore. So we're actually seeing quite a bit of hope, even though the work is hard.
It sounds really overwhelming. I guess working across international boundaries must be difficult, but you have a philosophy of getting local people doing a lot of this work,
exactly, right? Exactly, right. Yeah, about 90% of our staff or more are nationals to the countries where they do their work.
Tell us about how this organization started. There's a bit of a story there, right?
Right. Actually, so our founder, Gary Haugen, he was working within the Department of Justice, and he was working on police misconduct issues within the United States. But then in 1994, the Rwanda genocide hit in April of 1994. And during that time, you know, nearly a million people were slaughtered one by one with machetes. And it was just this mass destruction that happened over a very short period of time. And afterwards, there wasn't a lot of know-how about of what to do, how to even go about investigating this. And a lot of investigators were sent over to start looking into this crime. And basically, you had to start with the bodies. So you show up in Rwanda and you just go to these mass graves. And when investigators were deployed by the UN, they actually picked Gary Haugen to be the chief investigator of that genocide. So he was in charge of leading teams to all of these different mass graves throughout the country. And most of the graves were actually in the churches because people had run to the churches to seek shelter. And then they were trapped inside of the churches, and that's where they were ultimately killed. So while Gary was in this place amongst all these different mass graves, it was there that he realized that the church people who are Christians all over the world had been silent in the face of this massacre, and that it actually could have been stopped, and that every single one of those people in these mass graves, 800,000 or more people, every single one of them was infinitely loved by the God who had created them. And that was the message that he wanted to see people who are Christians, who know this God of justice, rise up and share and demonstrate through the way they lived. So he was compelled to start International Justice Mission to do that.
Well, it's been going for a few years now. What are some of the good stories? There must be a lot of stuff that's pretty bleak, but there's some good stories coming out of this work.
Absolutely. One of my favorite stories from recently is in South Asia, there is just an enormous amount of labor slavery, of people who are toiling, you know, more than 16 hours a day under just incredible heat, but also incredible violence and abuse and fear for their lives. And there was this one case that we found out about where there was a slave who was trying to get out. And so we had some intelligence on that, and we were working with the local police to find that one particular person and to rescue them. But at the end of the day, when we showed up at the facility, normally maybe you'll go after one person and you'll either rescue that one person, or maybe you'll even find a dozen more people who have been enslaved and that you can rescue at the same time, sometimes a couple of dozen people. This time it was 512 people who were rescued in this one operation that just started with one person who we knew was crying out for release.
These 500 you became aware of, were you able to work for their freedom as well?
We were able to bring all 512 of them out of the slave facility. Mm. And when we say rescue, though, we mean something very specific. It's not just finding a whole bunch of people who may or may not be enslaved and pulling them all out. It's when we say rescue, there's actually about 10 different things that we are processes that we're going through to ensure there that one, they were enslaved in the first place, and to demonstrate that to the government. But it also involves the government then giving them a release certificate, which is a very arduous process to get those certificates and that validation of yes, this was slavery, no, it cannot happen again. And then they actually are meant to pay reparations to the person who had been enslaved. And then we take that person into a full process of aftercare and long-term healing and transformation of their life, sustainability for the next season of their life now that they are free. So it's actually a really comprehensive process. So it's not just kind of going in and pulling a couple people out.
No, because a lot of those situations could easily return to unless there were good systems in place, right?
Exactly. And It's really critical to actually work with the government. We never go and try to rescue people just on our own, because what we're trying to do is to take these broken public justice systems and work within them so that they can begin to function in the way that they are always meant to function in the first place.
So this is not helicopters coming in at night and bursting through doors and saving people, right?
What we really want is a long-term transformation.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity.
So, Bethany, where do you fit into all this? How does working for this organization come into your story?
What was happening for me was that about a decade ago, actually more than a decade ago, I was in seminary.
Bible college type thing, right?
Exactly, right, at the master level. And so, but just like that. And really what I was passionate about was about churches all over the world. I wasn't actually going to be a pastor of a particular church, but just had this passion to see a true understanding of the gospel flourish throughout churches all over the world. And so I went to seminary to pursue that. And one day, as coming out of the cafeteria after lunch, just a really normal day, and I remember it clear as day, I walked out of the doors, and I was in this little foyer area, and off to the right was a table way down the hallway. I don't even really know why it caught my eye, but I just started walking towards it. And it turned out that there was a poster hung up at that table. And the poster said this. It said, "Slavery is alive." And then it said, "Rape for profit must be stopped." At that point, this was about 2001, I had no idea, one, that slavery actually was alive. I was a history student. I'd studied a lot about slavery all over the world. From, 150 to 400 years ago, I had no idea that slavery was alive today. And then this sentence, "rape for profit must be stopped," I had no idea that there was something called rape for profit. I actually did have a passion for things like healing of people who had experienced sexual abuse, especially as children, but this idea of an industry that flourished on the rape of children, totally new to me. And so I wandered a little closer to the table, and there was a woman there actually from the Salvation Army, and her name was Lisa, and she had a little sign-up sheet, and all you had to do was put your name down, your email address, and she said she would send information about modern-day slavery, about human trafficking. And, it seemed like such a small step if you think of it now, but it was really the only step. It was the very first opportunity I had to start engaging. And so I put my name down on this little list and started receiving emails from her. And I was just so overwhelmed. I would get flooded with these stories from all over the world of crimes I could never even imagine. And I remember just hanging my head in my hands one time, just wondering, what can I do? I just felt so paralyzed. And I wrote back to this woman at the Salvation Army, and I remember she told me, she's like, the only way I get out of bed and do this every day is that I remember this battle belongs to God, belongs to the God of justice. It's not our battle. He invites us to join it, and we get to experience hope and victory with him in that. And so about a year or so later, two significant things happened. One, I met the man that I would marry and spend the rest of my life with, Anthony, and he introduced me to an organization called International Justice Mission. And he took me to a little dinner that they were having in D.C. to talk about the work, and it was there that I first started to understand that my passion for the church, for what God is doing all over the world in the realm of drawing people to himself actually is completely connected to justice and to rescue, that these were not two separate things. And that was when I started to see a whole calling to come together on my life.
The Center for Public Christianity, Beyond Religion.
That's a great story. Thank you for that. Now, you live like we do in the affluent West. So in a sense, you've got a kind of a foot in two very different worlds, I guess, in the sort of work you're doing. Do you find that confronting?
It's really hard to wrap my mind around it a lot of times, actually. I mean, just yesterday I was sitting in this very nice hotel enjoying a really lovely conference with, you know, just all sorts of great people and great ideas to be thinking about, and I had a few minutes extra time, so I opened up my laptop to read through the opening pages of a book that our founder is working on right now for Oxford University Press, and I just received the first draft of his first chapters, and it instantly just transported me right into that grinding brutality of what the most vulnerable people in our world suffer through. And it was, I mean, I was sitting in this, you know, very nice hotel lobby with just, you know, coming to tears, just remembering how much suffering there is, but also just how much hope there is for rescue and new life.
The website of your organization says that that the staff stand against violent oppression in response to the Bible's call for justice. And there's a quote from Isaiah from the Old Testament that says, "Seek justice, rescue the oppressed, defend the orphan, plead for the widow." Why is that an important basis for what's being done in your organization?
It's hard to even know where to start because of how important it is. It's the foundation of everything that we do. Justice is certainly, it's a universal idea. You know, there's these concepts of common good, but justice, from what we believe, doesn't begin in kind of a common universal idea, but rather it begins in the character of the God who created the universe, that the God who created the universe actually carries justice as central to who he is, and that's where all of our work flows out. And it changes everything about how we approach every single case, every day of our work, the way we do it together, it shapes that.
Bethany, when you, as you do very frequently in your work, examine the terrible injustice and inequality of the world, how do you process that as a Christian? Is that ever a challenge to your own faith?
One of the things that I remember is what came to Gary when he was standing in those mass graves in Rwanda, during right after the genocide. And the question that so often comes to mind is, where is God? Where was God when this was happening? And as Gary was standing there in amidst all those bodies who had been macheted to death, and he was thinking, where was God? God turned that question around and said, no, the question is, where are my people? Where are God's people? And I think that's really the challenge before us today, is to realize that justice is the heartbeat of God, and that God is good, and that we can show God's goodness by showing up in the places of deepest darkness in the world and being that light that Jesus tells us we are, the light that can penetrate any darkness. And when we do that, when we show up and we trust that God is the one leading us, then the question of how can this possibly be true goes away, because we start to see just the incredible hope and transformation that God brings when we listen to Him and show up.
Well, it sounds like you've found a great intersection, really, of your greatest passion with the greatest need, which is a good place to be in, Bethany. Great to hear you talk about it today. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much. This is such a pleasure.